You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Even in a county full of people living under tarps and tents, the homeless encampment on San Vicente Boulevard, outside the big West LA Veterans Affairs campus, stands out. It's big, it's eye-catching, a long line of matching oversized tents with American flags on their fronts. This encampment is nicknamed Veterans Row by the people who live there. Most of them are military vets. And recently, they got a high-profile visitor, President Biden's Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Dennis McDonough. He walked up and down the row and stopped to speak with some unhoused vets.
Let's get you into housing tonight, okay? And we'll work everything else.
Yes.
That's McDonough speaking to unhoused Navy veteran Brian Helip.
I want to see the rest of the men taken care of.
Let's get you in housing tonight.
Thank you for everyone being here today. God bless.
You guys. I appreciate it. All right. Thank you.
So what was the VA secretary, who's based in Washington, doing at a homeless encampment in West Los Angeles? Well, KCRW's Anna Scott was there, and she filed this story.
That Navy veteran you just heard talking to Secretary McDonough, Brian Helip, actually camps across the street from Veterans Row, but he walked over here just in time to see the VA secretary. Helip tells me he hopes to get into a hotel room for the night.
I've been out here now 7 years.
Here is Brentwood, the West Side neighborhood where various famous people, including Vice President Kamala Harris, own homes. Brentwood also abuts the VA campus, a 388-acre property with a hospital on it, among other working facilities, and parts that look more like a horror movie set with rundown old institutional buildings. That property is where Secretary McDonough spent most of his recent visit to LA, meeting with local VA leaders. It's also where, for the last 5 years, the federal government has been working to create more than 1,200 apartments for homeless and needy veterans. But only 54 units have opened. McDonough says he'll accelerate that.
I'm not looking back much on, you know, who's to blame for what. I'm looking forward on how I get this done. And my job as secretary is to keep my foot on the gas, and I'm going to do that.
McDonough says the VA's West LA campus could become a national model for ending veteran homelessness once and for all. That's something the Obama administration, where McDonough served as White House chief of staff, tried to achieve. And over the last decade, the federal and local governments working together did reduce the number of homeless veterans in the country by nearly 50%. In Los Angeles, it went down even more than that. But LA County has long had the country's highest concentration of unsheltered veterans, and nearly 4,000 are still estimated to live in its shelters and on its streets, according to the most recent count. And the VA campus in West LA isn't a model for solving that crisis yet.
You've got the canvas here. You got the 388 acres. So let's go and push the button, President Biden. But until he pushes that button, there's no model to talk about.
That's activist and politician Bobby Shriver. A decade ago, he organized a lawsuit against the VA on behalf of homeless veterans, which is what forced them to come up with the housing plan for the West LA campus in the first place. The complaint argued that because the land that makes up the campus was donated to the federal government in the 19th century explicitly to serve as a home for veterans, that's what it has to be. The plaintiffs won that argument. As a result, the VA agreed to make over the property and build the 1,200 units of affordable housing. Shriver says the idea for the lawsuit came after years of driving past those horror movie buildings on the West LA campus.
It was the absurdity of the empty buildings with vets sleeping basically under the freeway 50 feet away. Like, how can that be? It's just absurd.
Construction is going on now. But a lot of the campus still looks largely the same as it did then. Reasons for the slow pace of development, according to a report by the VA's Inspector General, include costly and complicated water and sewer upgrades. And really, the big thing is that the housing costs a lot of money, and the developers who the VA has brought in to build it have had trouble scraping the financing together. So I put this to McDonough.
Why can't the VA just pay for the housing construction?
Well, look, we are investing a lot in infrastructure development here to make sure that everything that is turned over consistent with the requirements of law and the rulings.
He's saying they're already spending a lot on those infrastructure upgrades like the sewers and investing in other unrelated efforts on the campus. But spending more on the housing isn't off the table.
These are decisions that are obviously being implemented now over the course of many years. We'll continue to do our part in that and continue to look for ways that we can facilitate and expedite it getting done more quickly.
Bobby Shriver says the glacial pace so far, 54 units in 5 years, really boils down to a lack of political will, and that what's needed now is a sense of urgency from the highest levels of the federal government.
President Biden and Secretary McDonough, they have to get the bureaucracy out of the way. And Vice President Harris, who, as you know, lives down the street from this property, so she needs to push a button and say, I want that done in my community. I want it done now.
So the VA's West LA campus could still become a national model for ending veteran homelessness, or a case study in why LA's homelessness crisis is so enormous, if even with land, resources, promises from the top levels of government and a plan, thousands remain on the streets for years to come.
People say they want to house people, but they keep using every excuse why not to.
Unhoused Navy veteran Brian Helip. He could go right now into one of the many temporary shelter or treatment beds on the West Los Angeles campus, but he says he's been in and out of some of those programs before and wants something permanent, or at least
something that has an exit strategy if it doesn't work for me.
Other unhoused veterans here and their advocates have similar requests. McDonough walked Veterans Row with Robert Reynolds, an Army veteran who volunteers most of his time as an organizer of the unhoused veterans outside the West LA campus.
So it's been, you've had a lot of open lines with everybody. Everybody's talking to you.
Yes.
Everybody's accessible.
Yes.
Reynolds made the case to McDonough that making the West LA VA's temporary programs more accessible and flexible would cut the number of veterans languishing on the streets in the short term, like having a 24-hour shelter or an on-campus place for veterans who get kicked out of other programs to fall back on, as long as they weren't ejected for any type of violence.
All the ones that need the help the most are the ones that are getting screwed. They're the ones that are having the hardest time connecting to services. They're the ones that are having the hardest time accessing their benefits. And it doesn't, it really doesn't need to be that way.
VA officials in LA say they're considering all of those proposals. In recent weeks, the VA and the main city-county agency that deals with homelessness, as well as outside nonprofits, have been doing intense outreach at Veterans Row ahead of a sidewalk cleanup that's scheduled for November 1st. Secretary McDonough says the VA also hired a new full-time social worker dedicated to Veterans Row. As for the 1,200 promised apartments, according to an updated plan just released by the VA, those could take up to another decade to finish, unless somebody steps on the gas. For KCRW, I'm Anna Scott.
And now an important follow-up to tell you about. At a press conference today, VA Secretary McDonough said that in addition to housing the veterans on Veterans Row by the November 1st cleanup, the VA will then take the lead in housing 500 additional veterans in LA by the end of the year. And he also said that the VA is working on a list of names of every homeless vet across greater LA. We'll keep you updated on this story. We're back on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with KCRW's Greater LA, Steve Chiotakis here. There is a long list of benefits to a vegan diet, including perhaps less fatty foods and benefits to the environment. And you don't even have to give up eating meat or dairy-like things. You can find them everywhere, from fancier fare to fast food. Burger King with its Impossible Whopper, Carl's Jr. Soon even McDonald's will have the McPlant Burger. And the grocery store is full of all kinds of new options in plant-based cheeses and milks. If your diet doesn't include meat or dairy, or if you're no meat curious, then the Vegandale Festival is for you. It'll have all the vegan treats and merch and music at the Los Angeles State Historic Park this weekend on Saturday. And Lauren Toyota is a vegan chef, a content creator here in LA, and she's hosting the event. She's with us right now. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, Steve.
Tell us about the festival. I mean, it's the first year that it'll be here in LA. What food can you expect?
It is. Yeah, it's the first LA time that we've been here. And I just did Chicago, New York, and Toronto. The festival is huge. Thousands of people showed up to party, to dance, to eat. And the food, of course, is the major draw. So there's over 100 vegan food vendors. There's about 30 or so out-of-town vendors. So if you're in LA, you get to try, you know, vegan comfort food from Illinois, from Oregon, from Texas, all over the country, which is really, really cool. So people really make the effort to come out and showcase what they're cooking up. And, you know, things like, you know, deep fried oyster mushroom, hot wings and crazy, you know, cheeseburgers. And we've got these igloo, you know, Hong Kong style waffles stuffed with all kinds of ice cream and fun stuff. So it's really unique food. I mean, it doesn't even matter that it's plant-based vegan. It's just good, interesting food. So all the foodies need to come out, whether they're vegan or not.
And I mean, that's what I was going to say. You know, used to be, if you were vegan, I would always think, my gosh, it's so difficult to be vegan, right? Because there are so few options. But now it seems like there's a replacement for meat or dairy in pretty much everything.
Yeah, it's so popular. And I have to say, you know, even in Los Angeles, it is like way ahead of, you know, a lot of other places in the country. Los Angeles is a total hotspot for vegan food. Obviously, everywhere you go, you'll find lots of options and substitutes on the menu. Like you said, the grocery store is full of option. It's really a wonderland, I have to say. As someone who actually comes from Canada, now living in LA, LA is where it's at for vegan food. So it's really cool. We've come so far in just the last few years, really, with the products and the invention. So it's awesome.
At the heart of the festival, Lauren, is veganism, obviously, and cutting down on, and I mentioned this at the top, cutting down on meat and dairy consumption, it can actually help offset climate change because of the emissions associated with raising farm animals, things like that, the methane. Can you talk a little bit more about the connection between diet and the environment?
100%. I mean, it's the best thing you can do to combat climate change. Animal agriculture and all of the kind of, you know, components involved in it, like water consumption, land use, and all of that. It's the biggest proponent to our climate change and emissions issues. I don't think people really realize that, even though it's been stated as fact by, you know, the UN and many global organizations. So that is extremely important. To cut down on it 100% and make your way towards eating 100% vegan is the goal. And the other thing is, you know, we need to really make the connection between cruelty, you know, the killing of animals for food. It's become such a norm in our society, but, you know, Vegandale and myself and Vegandale are really, you know, wanting to hammer home this idea that, you know, this is for the animals. You know, these animals don't need to be consumed for food. We're killing them at an alarming rate. And I think that's really a connection that people need to start thinking closer about, especially if, you know, people love animals, but then they eat meat. And so that's really the connection. It's so simple that, you know, apart from just the good food, it's like if you can taste good food and realize that it's completely cruelty-free, you feel so much better.
And there are health benefits. I mean, for sure.
Yes, for sure. That's like the icing on the vegan cake. Not only are you saving the planet, saving animals, living a cruelty-free life, which kind of makes that mind-body-spirit connection that much stronger. And then the health benefits really are there. I mean, we know red meat, we know processed meat and dairy do contribute to heart disease, stroke, and cancer. And I mean, I think people, you know, want to make better choices.
Why did you make the choice? Why did you choose to be vegan?
It was a combination of these things. I'm going on 12 years vegan, and I made the choice for my health. I wasn't feeling good eating animal and dairy products, and also I really loved animals, and it always seemed strange to me and weird to eat them and consume them, and I never felt right about it. So that was really my big push, and finally made the change.
You were a Canadian TV presenter for a long time, right? Why did you decide to leave that and pursue a job in food? That's quite a jump.
It is. It was my dream job to work in television and be a host. We were called VJs back in that day on Much Music. And I fulfilled
Much
that
Music
dream.
Much Music was the Canadian equivalent to MTV, right?
Exactly, yes. And so I did that. It was super fun. Truthfully, I mean, there was so much change going on in the media landscape and the broadcasting landscape that basically it was cutbacks that led to me kind of transitioning out of the industry. But I was also ready. I had started going vegan, you know, on the side, just in my regular lifestyle. I started blogging for fun just to kind of keep myself accountable and blog my journey of going vegan. And I, because, you know, this is so intimately intertwined into my lifestyle and just like my purpose in life and a kind of a mission, I think it really made sense to kind of take what I learned from broadcasting, from hosting and, you know, video production and all that and funnel it into now this mission to try to get people to go vegan. It feels much more like a purposeful sort of career journey, truthfully, but I learned so much and I use, you know, all that I learned in television on a daily basis with running my own business now.
There was this Pew Research Center survey that found 8% of Black Americans are strict vegans or vegetarians. That's compared to just 3% of the general population. Do you see those percentages playing out here in LA? Are more Black Angelenos drawn to a plant-based diet? If so, why do you think that is?
Yeah, Black Americans are the fastest growing group toward adopting a vegan lifestyle, which is really incredible because it really is that community taking back control of their health, and I think it's kind of like fighting the system. It is in protest. A lot of food deserts exist in lower income neighborhoods where, of course, you find Black and Latinos. And I think it's actually like a choice in protest of the system. And I think it's a very powerful choice. Not only that, but it's also historically, you know, you have the ITAL movement, which is, you know, all vegan. And you see that in Black Americans too. So they're actually, you know, have paved a lot of way for this movement too, culturally. And when you come to Vegandale, and that's what I mean by the diverse crowd. I mean, New York was predominantly non-white crowds. It was all people of color. It was really cool. And I have to say that's the big difference in being at Vegandale than other vegan festivals that I have been to and attended in the past. You know, they tend to be about health and wellness and yoga and spirituality, which do tend to skew very white. And those don't tend to be safe spaces for people of color. And Vegandale has really curated the festival to be welcoming and inclusive. So I think that's the most important part about this.
Lauren Toyota, vegan chef and hosting the Vegandale Festival this Saturday near downtown LA at the LA State Historic Park. Lauren, thanks.
Thank you. I'll see you there.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The pandemic sent LA area students home to learn remotely, leaving a bunch of schools scrambling to get those students connected, particularly in low-income communities of color. At the same time, a bunch of big companies had all kinds of technical equipment sitting idle because their workers were also working from home. Connecting those things required a lot of help.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Oh, baby, have it now. All I need is my brother. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Will Bumpus noticed what was going on with that disconnect between the students who needed the equipment and all that equipment that sat idled at those businesses. And he started an organization called Rework. And he joins us right now. Hi, Will.
Hi. Good to hear you. Thanks for having me on.
Good to hear you. And glad you joined us. So lay it out for us. What exactly is it that Rework does? Is it just getting that equipment that perhaps wouldn't be used otherwise to those kids who really need it?
Yeah, it started off as, you know, bridging the digital divide, which is, you know, trying to get laptops, monitors, and even Wi-Fi routers into schools, nonprofits that are doing work on on coding boot camps or reskilling. But what happened is, as I started to talk to more companies that are, you know, were planning going back to the office, or a term that I learned of de-densifying their office space, what I learned is that they have a ton of furniture as well. So all of those nice sit-stand desks, those ergonomic chairs, you know, it really was just going to be sitting idle as well. And, you know, we've had great opportunities to partner with companies like a Twitter that donated their entire San Jose office. You know, we've partnered with Disney, who now every quarter we talk about what kind of laptops and monitors are available for donation.
So we're talking about true donations, right? It's not like, hey, you can borrow some of our equipment as long as the pandemic is going on.
Yeah, no, true donations. Once it gets to the school, to the nonprofit, it's theirs to use and theirs to build on. There has been some cases where we've asked for some social capital as well. Like, for example, you know, the dream of mine is to have a student who is learning on, let's say, a laptop donated from Airbnb, you know, continue to facilitate and learn about coding and engineering to where they can get a job at a company like Airbnb or another tech company, and really want that to be achieved through Rework.
I got to ask you this question. Do you get people who are confused between Rework and WeWork?
All of the time. And not gonna lie, a part of me was trying to be a little bit cheeky with it, as it was very, very close to the name, just given some of the things that we've seen with WeWork over the years. But no, it happens all the time. And actually, you'll notice the spelling is different, because I was in quite the domain name battle.
The spelling being W-E-R-K, work as in twerk.
Exactly. If I can get Missy Elliott to do a song for us, then I will absolutely be enamored.
How did you figure out that there might be this need out there, that you might be able to help fill it? Did you, I mean, were you one day just being like, oh, all these companies have all this stuff, and there are so many people who need this stuff?
It was something like that. I mean, I have a lot of you know, friends or in companies that I work with where they were giving stipends for employees to work from home, you know, build out your home office, get yourself a second screen, get yourself a new chair. But at the same time, you know, some organizations I was volunteering at, they would be struggling to get Wi-Fi access. They would, you know, all be sitting around the kitchen counter trying to, you know, one person's trying to learn, one person's trying to look for work, one person's trying to work. And, you know, oftentimes they were sharing the same machine that was, you know, a couple years old or out of date. And I was like, how is this possible? Because I know that a lot of the companies, specifically tech companies here in LA or in the Bay Area, you know, have these beautiful campuses. One of the nonprofits that we work with, called Digital Nest, refers to those campuses as these office utopias. And, you know, for the most part, over the last year and a half, and I think even to date, people haven't been going to these office utopias. So the natural connection I made is like, well, what happens to it while it's sitting there? And, you know, really from that, I went on a listening tour trying to talk to a few different companies to ask that question, like, what happens with that stuff? And just about every company I talked to said, I don't know. And what my attempt to do early on in the pandemic was just to plant that flag to say that there's tons of communities, underserved and underrepresented communities, specifically communities of color, that I think could really use and leverage all of that gear. And so that's really how it all came together.
You're the liaison, the consigliere.
Oh, I mean, I am very close to being like a furniture baron of LA, but so I have desks and chairs and all different kinds of things, but it's been amazing to see what is available and what's there.
Have you heard back from any of the groups that you've provided this equipment and this furniture and all this other stuff to? I mean, what are they telling you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them, one, appreciate this idea of just being seen. And so, like, that was a big feeling that I was getting from a lot of the recipients and schools that were getting it. But beyond that, I mean, one of my most favorite donations is we partnered with Blizzard here, and, you know, they had a lot of excess gaming consoles and headsets and all sorts of things that were going to be used for a tournament that didn't happen because of COVID. So we got brand new gaming consoles to a school in Crenshaw, where they can now not only, you know, practice for esports purposes, but they learn about gaming, and they learn about, you know, what it takes to develop a game and all of that through the curriculum that's being taught there.
Well, I want to thank you for your time, Will, and for all that you do. And by the way, this isn't your day job. You have another job, your day job. You're a partner at the investment fund Concrete Rose Capital. But you also founded this company, this nonprofit called Rework, and I want to thank you for your time. Will Bumpus, glad you were with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, one way the governments are trying to address a nutrition gap in the age of COVID. We're online at kcrw.com/GLA. Subscribe to the podcast, get it fresh to your feed, and join us there, kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordall all help piece the show together. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.